ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today we are going to study verse number 7 of chapter 7 of the Bhagavad Gita. Those of you who have your copies of Bhagavad Gita, kindly open it to page 371. I will recite the shloka, kindly repeat after me. Mattah parataram nanyat kinchidasti dhananjaya मयि सर्वमिदं प्रोतम् सूत्रे मणिगणा इव मत्तः परतरं नान्यत् किञ्चिदस्ति धनञ्जय मयि सर्वमिदं प्रोतम् सूत्रे मणिगणा इव मत्तः परतरं नान्यत् किञ्चिदस्ति धनञ्जय मयि सर्वम् इदं प्रोतम् सूत्रे मणिगणा इव। सो ऐ विल् रीड् द वर्ड् फार् वर्ड् मीनिङ्ग्, कैण्ड् रिपीट् आफ्टर् मी। मत्तः Beyond myself, parataram, superior, na, not, anyat, anything, kinchit, something, asti, there is, dhananjaya, O conqueror of wealth, mayi, in me, Sarvam, all that be, idam, which we see, protam, strung, sutre, on a thread, manigana, pearls, eva, likened. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Please repeat after me. O conqueror of wealth, Arjuna, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vansha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Rama Hare Hare. So I will read the purport or the commentary written by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. There is a common controversy over whether the Supreme Absolute Truth is personal or impersonal. As far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned, the Absolute Truth is the personality of Godhead, Shri Krishna. And this is confirmed in every step. In this verse in particular, it is stressed that the Absolute Truth is a person. That the personality of Godhead is the Supreme Absolute Truth is also the affirmation of the Brahma Samhita. Ishvaraha Paramaha Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha. That is, the Supreme Absolute Truth, personality of Godhead, is Lord Krishna, who is the primeval Lord, the reservoir of all pleasure, Govinda, and the eternal form of complete bliss and knowledge. These authorities leave no doubt that the Absolute Truth is the Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. The impersonalist, however, argues on the strength of the Vedic version given in the Svetashvatara Upanishad. Quote, "In the material world, Brahma, the primeval living entity within the universe, is understood to be the supreme amongst the demigods, human beings and lower animals. But beyond Brahma, amongst the demigods, human beings, and beyond Brahma there is a transcendence, who has no material form and is free from all material contaminations. Anyone who can know him also becomes transcendental, but those who do not know him suffer the miseries of the material world." The impersonalist puts more stress on the word arupam, but this arupam is not impersonal. It indicates the transcendental form of eternity, bliss and knowledge as described in Brahma Samhita quoted above. Other verses in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad substantiate this as follows. Quote, "I know that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is transcendental to all material conceptions of darkness, only He knows Him who can transcend the bonds of birth and death. There is no way for liberation other than this knowledge of that Supreme Person. There is no truth superior to that Supreme Person because He is the supermost. He is smaller than the smallest and He is greater than the greatest. He is situated as a silent tree and He illumines the transcendental sky, and as a tree spreads its roots, He spreads His extensive energies." From these verses one concludes that the Supreme Absolute Truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all-pervading by His multi-energies, both material and spiritual. So thus ends the commentary given by Srila Prabhupada. So this is also another very, very important shloka of the Bhagavad Gita, because in this we understand who is the Supreme Lord, what is the Supreme Absolute Truth. This is a question that has plagued mankind from time immemorial. Ever since we know it, people have always been asking the question, is there a God? If so, who is He? Where is He? And great philosophers, poets, religionists, saints, sages, mystics have all tried their hand in trying to understand who is the Supreme. Krishna is very clearly stating here that He is the Supreme Absolute Truth and that there is no other truth superior to Him. We also saw in the previous lecture last Wednesday how Lord Krishna declares that He is the source or the origin of everything. It is not surprising that the people of this world cannot understand that Lord Krishna is the origin of everything and that He is the Supreme Absolute Truth. It is very difficult to understand the subject matter unless one approaches it in the right spirit. What to speak of human beings? Even great demigods, devatas, great sages also have from time to time become baffled in their attempts to understand who is God. People in this world get into so many arguments about God. But that is nothing strange. It is happening also among the demigods, among the devatas. Therefore, Lord Krishna explains in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, "Name vidhu suragana prabhavam na maharishayaha aham adirhi devanam." He says that ultimately, the demigods, the sages, no one can know me. Name vidhu suragana. Even the suras, the devatas cannot know me. Neither can the maharishis know me. Because I am their origin. Aham adirhi devanam. Maharishinam sarvashah. And I am the origin of both the demigods and the sages. So sometimes even the demigods and sages, Lord Krishna says, they cannot understand me. It's very difficult for them. So naturally for us petty human beings, it is natural that unless we take the information from the right source, we are also going to be baffled. We will have so many different ideas and impressions. So once upon a time, the demigods were having such an argument amongst each other as to who is supreme. So they decided that this matter, the argument was getting them nowhere. every demigod was saying his opinion, and there was great conflict. So they decided that this is not the way to settle the discussion. So they appointed one person, a very exalted Brahmana, called Bhrigu Muni. And they said, Bhrigu Muni, you kindly settle this matter for us. We have reached the conclusion that Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, we have narrowed our search down to these three. Now we know that one among these three is the supreme. But as to which of these three, we are not able to decide. So you kindly find out for us. So Bhrigu Muni said, alright. So first of all, he went to Brahma. Now when he went to Brahma, as you know, Brahma is in the mode of passion. He is in charge of the mode of passion. Now Brahma is actually the father of Bhrigu Muni. And it is the etiquette in the Vedic culture that the son offers respect to the parent, to the father. So Bhrigu Muni wanted to test now who among these three is supreme. So when he went to Brahma, he did not stand up or did not offer respects, just to test Lord Brahma. So Brahma immediately, his eyes flared because of anger, because of this breach of etiquette. But because he was such an exalted person, he could control his anger. But then, he understood that because I'm a pure devotee, therefore I should control my anger. But Bhrigu Muni understood that no, he has lost his temper. Therefore he cannot be supreme. He is not in control of his senses. He cannot be supreme. So then he went ahead. He apologized to Lord Brahma and went ahead. He came to Lord Shiva. Now Lord Shiva was at that time seated with Parvati. And Bhrigu Muni, without as much as knocking, he went straight inside. And not only that, at that time Lord Shiva welcomed him. Although he had intruded into his private room, but still Lord Shiva was very kind because he was such a great Brahmin. And Lord Shiva has also come from the forehead of Brahma. This is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So actually Shiva and Bhrigu Muni were brothers. So as brothers, they were expected to embrace each other as equals. So when Lord Shiva came forward, and in spite of this breach of etiquette, when Bhrigu Muni walked in, intruded into the private quarters of Lord Shiva, still Lord Shiva passed the first test. He did not get upset. He went forward and he went to embrace his brother Bhrigu Muni. So Bhrigu Muni decided to give him the second test. He said, I cannot embrace you because your body is smeared with crematorium ashes and there are all these filthy snakes all around your body on your neck. How can I embrace you? I will get completely dirty. So I cannot embrace you. Again at that time, Lord Shiva, his eyes flared. He could control himself, but then Bhrigu Muni understood that Lord Shiva has lost control. So he understood that he is also not supreme. He is very exalted, no doubt, but he is supreme. Then he decided to go to Lord Vishnu. So when he went to Lord Vishnu, at that time Lord Vishnu was lying on his bed of Sheshanag, Ananta Shesh, very comfortably lying down in Yoga Nidra. And at that time, Mother Lakshmi was also massaging his lotus feet. So when Bhrigu Muni came, he immediately went up to Lord Vishnu. And he did a very surprising thing. Immediately, he struck him with his foot. He kicked him. He kicked Lord Vishnu with his foot on Lord Vishnu's chest. He went up and kicked him because he wanted to test him and see the reaction. At that time, Lord Vishnu, he just got up. And what did he do? If you were lying on your bed and somebody came and kicked you on your chest, what would you do? Or what would I do? But what did Lord Vishnu do? He got up immediately in a very, very humble and apologetic way, and he caught hold of the lotus feet of Bhrigu Muni and said, my dear Brahmana, I am so sorry that you have hurt your foot. My chest is so hard that I am sure that your soft lotus feet must have got hurt by striking. So please let me massage your feet. Please let me give it some relief because I'm sure you are hurt. I'm sorry I could not make my chest softer so that it would give some pleasure to your feet. So Bhrigu Muni was completely taken aback. You see, progressively he had gone on greater to greater offense. The first offense against Brahma that he had done was at a mental level. The second offense, he had actually spoken to Lord Shiva, insulting words. So a verbal offense is considered to be more serious than a mental offense. And here, it was a physical offense. A physical offense is considered to be even greater than a verbal offense and far greater than a mental offense. And yet, Lord Vishnu was completely composed, completely renounced. No problem. So then Bhrigu Muni understood, yes, Lord Vishnu is the supreme. So the discussion was settled. But incidentally, it also happened that because Lakshmiji was standing, she was there, and she was infuriated. Which wife will tolerate the husband being kicked in the chest? So, she cursed Bhrigu Muni. Then from now on I curse you, that I will never stay wherever people of your group are around. Wherever Brahmanas are around, I will never stay with them. That is why, from that day, we find the Brahmins are always poor. Because Lakshmi never stays with them. She is chanchal as far as they are concerned. She never stays with them. But in any case, Bhrigu Muni's task was done. He had confirmed that Lord Vishnu is the supreme and all the demigods were satisfied. Now last Wednesday, I related to you the story of how Akrura, when he was going from taking Lord Krishna and Balaram from Vrindavan to Mathura, they halted at the Yamuna River and there he saw Lord Krishna expanding himself into Mahavishnu and so on. So we can understand that Lord Krishna is actually the origin of all the Vishnu avatars. So Bhrigu Muni understood that Lord Vishnu is the supreme among these three. But even Lord Vishnu is not the absolutely supreme person, because even the origin of Lord Vishnu is Lord Krishna. In one sense, there is no difference between Lord Vishnu and Lord Krishna. But we should understand that Lord Krishna is the original person from whom all these other Vishnu tattvas and avatars have come. So Lord Krishna is the original supreme person. So having settled this, the demigods were then very, very happy. So in this way we can see that sometimes demigods not only get baffled, they are unable to decide. And sometimes they also get so proud, because the demigods are very, very powerful living entities. They have been empowered by the Supreme Lord. They have so much power, so much intelligence. Their lifespan is so immensely long, hundreds of thousands of years, that we cannot imagine. And yet, the demigods sometimes are baffled. And sometimes, they get very proud of their powers. And they forget from whom they are getting these powers. Very often we see, it is all there in the politics every day in the newspaper. You find dissident leaders, dissident political leaders, isn't it? Some person, he has criticized the party chief, or the chief minister, or the prime minister. So what does the prime minister do? He sacks him. Right? Because this person, he has got his authority as the party chief or state party chief or whatever from the minister, from the prime minister or the chief minister. But now, he is in fact criticizing the very person who has given him that power. So the power is taken away from him and he gets baffled or he gets chastised. Similarly, the demigods, they are not the origin of the power. Aham adirhi devanam, Lord Krishna says. He says the powers that they have, they also come from me. But sometimes the demigods, because of these immense powers, they forget where these powers are coming from. And they think, oh, I am so powerful. Just see, I am the Supreme Lord. And therefore, Lord Krishna sometimes has to bewilder them. He has to chastise them. He has to sometimes admonish them. But the ways in which he does it, in which Lord Krishna admonishes, is very wonderful. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have so many stories of how the demigods were from time to time taught lessons by Lord Krishna because they forgot his supremacy. One such very wonderful story given in the Srimad Bhagavatam is the story of Lord Brahma. When Lord Brahma came to Vrindavan, he was seeing that this baby boy Krishna, who was only just about 7 or 8 years old, he was performing so many wonderful pastimes. He was even younger than that at this time. As you know, he killed Putana, he killed Aghasur, he killed Pralambasur. So many demons and asuras had come. And all of them were effortlessly killed by Lord Krishna. Although he was a small boy. So all the devatas were singing the glories of this boy, Krishna. And they were showering flowers every time he killed an asura. And so Brahma was wondering, who can this boy be? And the last straw was when Lord Krishna killed a great snake asura called Aghasur. And when Aghasura was killed, this time Brahma decided, this is it, now I must find out. So he came down to earth and saw that this is a huge demon. He has been killed effortlessly by this boy. And everyone, the demigods are worshipping him. What is the matter? Let me find out. So he decided that since he had so many powers, he should try to test whether this boy really has greater powers or not. So what did he do? You see, at that time, Lord Krishna was sitting in the forest. As you know, he was like a cowherd boy. And as cowherd boys do, they were given the task of taking all the calves, the children of the cows, for grazing in the forest. And they would go for grazing, and they would sit down somewhere at the noontime, and all the boys would take out their tiffin boxes, which they brought from their homes, and they would eat and share their lunch, like they are sitting here now. Like Lord Krishna is sitting with all the cowherd boys. They are happily eating lunch. As you see, Krishna is the cynosure of their eyes. Their eyes are always on Krishna. So in this way they were eating, and then, unfortunately, because they were so caught up with eating, their calves wandered away. And they didn't notice. And finally when they looked up, they saw the cows have wandered into the forest, and they were very much afraid that the calves may get lost. And what will our parents say, that we have lost the calves? So immediately, the cowherd boys, what did they do? They shouted out for Krishna. Because these cowherd boys, every time they were in trouble, all they had to do was to shout for Krishna, and Krishna would come and solve the problem. So they did the same. So Krishna said, no problem. You go ahead and eat your lunch, I will go and get the calves back. So he went ahead into the forest. And at that time, Brahma, who was present there, he saw this as an opportunity. He says, now let me play some tricks. So Brahma has tremendous mystic powers. So what did he do? He took all the calves from the forest, and he took all the cowherd boys also, and he hid them in a cave. And he put them in a deep slumber, just like the hypnotists do. They mumble some mantras and put you to sleep. So Brahma, by his mystic powers, he put all the cowherd boys and the calves to sleep in a cave. And he went away. When Lord Krishna came back, he saw there's nobody there, neither the calves nor the cowherd boys. So what to do? But because Lord Krishna is a Supreme Lord, he is present in the heart of every living entity, including the heart of Lord Brahma. So he immediately understood what had happened. But for Lord Krishna, there is no problem for anything. So what did he do? He wanted to teach Brahma a lesson. So immediately he expanded himself into innumerable forms. That is one of the meanings of God. That God can expand himself unlimitedly into any number of forms and into any shape, any size, into any way he wants. God means achintya. He is inconceivable. We cannot limit the abilities of God, the strengths of God by our mundane minds and intelligence. So he expanded himself into exactly the same form as all the cowherd boys and all the calves. And all the cowherd boys looked exactly like the original. The shape of the nose, the shape of the ear, the way they spoke, their appearance, their clothes, their everything, the manner of walking, sitting, everything was 100% perfectly imitated. And all these calves were also similarly well imitated. And actually both the calves and these cowherd boys were now directly Krishna. So Krishna then took all the cowherd boys and the calves, and they all started going home. And they reached home. Now Brahma went back, and he decided to come back after just a fraction of a second. But a fraction of a second according to Brahma's time is 1 year according to Earth time. Because Brahma lives for 100 years, but 100 of his years are equal to more than 300 trillion years on Earth. Now all this we will know when we come to some other verses that we discuss in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So Brahma's lifetime is very long. Brahma's one day is very, very long, many millions of years long. So Brahma's one fraction of a moment was equal to 1 year on the earth. So barely, even less than after a blink of an eye, Lord Brahma came down again to the earth. And then, what did he see? He said, now let me see the fun. So he came back. But what happened? He saw all the cowherd boys were there. They were playing, sitting and eating their lunch. And again the calves were grazing in the field. And Lord Brahma immediately was baffled. He immediately went to the cave where he had hid the boys and the calves. And he found the boys and the calves are there also. He quickly ran back here. He saw here also the calves and the boys are here. So his head started spinning. He became dizzy. What's going on? I am the supreme most person in this universe. I am the creator of this universe. I have been given the power to create. Who is this little boy who is coming and just out of nowhere he is creating all these cowherd boys, all these calves? What is going on? I cannot understand. Brahma was completely struck with wonder. He was rooted at that spot like a tree. He was struck speechless. He was just gaping with his mouth wide open and his eyes wide open. He could not understand what is going on. Then finally, realization dawned upon him. And he realized, yes, this is none other than my Supreme Lord whom I have forgotten because of my pride. And then he came and surrendered to Lord Krishna. This is Brahma, the four-headed Brahma. He is coming and surrendering to Lord Krishna. You can see this beautiful picture here. Can you all see? And he is coming and surrendering. That I made a mistake, please forgive me. And at that time Lord Krishna, because after all Brahma is a great devotee of his. So he said, out of mercy, he decided he would show him exactly what he had done. And what did Lord Krishna do? He immediately expanded, or he showed his actual form. All the cowherd boys and calves who were actually his own form, he made the cowherd boys and the calves resume their original Vishnu form. So originally these cowherd boys were all Vishnu forms. So all the calves and cowherd boys right in front of Brahma's eyes became Vishnus, all of them. All of them individually, so many Vishnu forms. And again Brahma's mind was spinning. He said, I cannot comprehend this. This little boy, just 6-7 years old, is performing these wonders. They are beyond my imagination. So again, Brahma could understand who is supreme. So you see, again we see another point. That here also, Lord Krishna is the origin of all the Vishnu forms. Not only is the supreme, is He the supreme absolute truth, but He is actually the origin of even all the Vishnu forms and all the avatars and everything. So He is the Supreme Truth. Similarly, we find in the case of Indra. You know what this Leela is? Lifting of Govardhan Hill. I will just briefly tell you how the Brijavasis, the residents of Vrindavan, at that time they were going to worship Indra because Indra supplies rain. And as a result of the rain, the crops grow. And when the crops grow, then the whole economy of that village will become very prosperous. But Krishna said, no, don't worship Indra. Indra's powers also come from me. And I am not different from Govardhan Hill, so you please worship Govardhan Hill. So Krishna was very clever. So he was able to convince his father. And all the other Brijavasis agreed. Because they loved Krishna so much, that immediately whatever he said, they would do. So then, they started worshipping. All the ingredients and paraphernalia that they had brought for worshipping Indra, they used now for worshipping Govardhan Hill, which is the form of Lord Krishna. When Indra realized, he was just waiting. Yes, now the residents of Vrindavan are going to perform yajna and sacrifices for my pleasure. And suddenly at the last minute when he saw what is meant for me is being taken away and offered to Govardhan, because of the words of this small boy who was only 7 years old, Indra was also infuriated. And he told his most powerful cloud, because he's in charge of the rain, Samvartaka cloud. He says, go on top of Vrindavan and you shed incessant rain there for 7 days. Such rain, the likes of which they have never seen in their whole life. Flood them completely. So the Samvarta cloud went and started showering heavy torrents of rain upon Vrindavan. And at that time again, the residents of Vrindavan, they had nothing to do but to take shelter of Krishna. So again they said, Krishna, Krishna, please help us. So what did Krishna do? He did not panic or run here and there. He did not go to call the police or to call the lawyers or the army. All he had to do, he just effortlessly lifted Govardhan Hill on the little finger of his left hand. This painting here shows the right hand, but actually it's the left hand. And the little finger. And he held it aloft for 7 days and 7 nights. This picture shows Krishna to be very tall. But actually Krishna was only a small boy at that time. You can see in this wonderful painting how Krishna, the boy Krishna, is lifting Govardhan Hill. And try hard as Indra might to shed as much as rain as possible, but no effect. All the rain was simply being washed down the sides of Govardhan and all the residents of Vrindavan, they were being protected. In fact, Sudarshan Chakra, Krishna Sudarshan Chakra was whizzing around the periphery of the hill, so that with the tremendous heat, all the water on the side is getting evaporated. So no water was coming inside also. So it was completely dry and safe, and for 7 days, 7 nights they lived there. Ultimately, after 7 days, even Indra realized, yes, he came to his senses, that this boy is not an ordinary boy. This boy is the Supreme Absolute Truth, Lord Krishna, none other than my worshipable Lord. So Indra also came down, but because he was ashamed, he came in a very secret place. And there he surrendered to Lord Krishna again. We see here, this is Indra coming and surrendering to Lord Krishna. So Indra also surrendered. Indra is the chief devata, the king of the demigods. Brahma is the creator of the universe. And both of them have understood that Krishna is the supreme absolute truth and there is no one other than him. So they understood the hard way. But by their example, we can understand it the simple way. Otherwise, we will be simply confused and baffled. All we have to do is to take reference to the Shastra, the scripture. Scripture is the word of God, the word of the Supreme Absolute Truth Himself. All we have to do is to refer to Shastra and we will get perfect information on all matters spiritual. If you go to any typical Hindu home, you will find on the altar an array of photographs of so many different gods and goddesses. And usually the reply you will get is that, well, I am worshipping all of them because I believe in all of them. All of them are supreme. Or someone may say, well, I am worshipping a particular devata or a devi and this person is supreme or that person is supreme. But the basis for their saying it is not really in scripture. Their basis is either because there is some family tradition coming down the ages, because they have been told so by people, or simply out of some sentiment or some emotion. But it is not based on a philosophical understanding. It is not based upon Shastra. But in the Shastra, Lord Krishna has unequivocally stated in Bhagavad Gita, which is the word of Krishna, the God Himself, Mattah parataram na anyat kinchid asti dhananjaya. There is no truth superior to me. There are so many truths, but all these truths are relative. Krishna says everything is dependent on me. I am the supreme absolute truth. So by this, we should understand that Krishna's position is declared very clearly in all the scriptures. Even Arjuna declares very clearly. He says, Param Brahmam Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavan Purusham Shashvatam Divyam Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum. He says, my dear Lord Krishna, you are the supreme Brahman, Param Brahma. Param Dhamma, you are the supreme abode. You are the supreme pure person. You are the supreme person, the eternal Shashvatam Divyam. You are transcendental. You are not a material person. You are a spiritual person. And you are the origin of all the devatas, and you have no beginning. And then he goes on to say, Ahustvam Rishayah Sarve Devarishi Naradastatha Asito Devalo Vyasa Swayam Chaiva Pravishime. He says, I am declaring this of you, of course, but not only me, but all the great sages like Asita, Devala, Vyas, Narad, all of them are declaring this of you, that you are the supreme absolute truth. And now, you also are saying the same thing to me, Swayam Chaiva Bravishime. So there should be no doubt in this regard. That is what Arjuna wants to say. And Arjuna is trying to convince, he's speaking in this way to convince all of us who may have doubts, to tell us very unequivocally that yes, you must be convinced that Lord Krishna, the Supreme Person, is the Supreme Absolute Truth and there is no one superior to Him. And further, Lord Krishna goes on to explain here, Mai sarvam idam protam sutre maniganaiva. He says, I am the Supreme Lord, and to be the Supreme Absolute Truth means that He is all pervading. He is everywhere, Lord Krishna says. Mai sarvam idam protam. I am everywhere. But how is Lord Krishna everywhere? Lord Krishna is everywhere through the medium of His energies. And therefore, Lord Krishna says here, sutre maniganaiva. It's a wonderful example. He says, just like in a pearl necklace, all the pearls are very nicely arranged on the string. They are dazzling, all the pearls are dazzling, very nice it looks. But if you take away the thread, will the pearls stay there? Why are the pearls in the form of a necklace? Is that the natural position of the pearls? the pearls have been put there by somebody, and because the string is present there, the pearls are able to be held together. Otherwise, the pearls would have scattered. So what is it that is holding the pearls together? The string. The pearls are resting upon the string, which is unseen. You cannot see the string, but still you can understand that there is a string. Similarly, Lord Krishna says, all these planets, incidentally, the planets are also round in shape. The whole universe, all the universes, each universe is also round in shape, just like pearls. And Krishna says, all of these are resting upon me. Just like the pearls are resting upon the thread, all these planetary systems, all the universes, they are resting upon me. So by this shloka, we can understand what is the proof of God's existence. Tomorrow, if somebody asks you, what is the proof that God exists, you can cite this shloka. And say, just like you cannot see the thread, but you understand the thread is there. Similarly, all these planets, all the universes, how are they being sustained? Are they being sustained just like that? What are the laws? The laws, there must be a person who has made the laws, who has designed the laws, and who has set it in such a way that they are all resting perfectly. So this is the proof for the existence of God. Remember the simple example of the pearl necklace, and whatever doubts you may have about not believing in God automatically will get sorted out. So, Lord Krishna says that everything is resting upon His energies just like the pearls are resting upon the thread. Now, Lord Krishna has stated that He has two kinds of energies. We will also cover these shlokas at the appropriate time. These energies are coming from Krishna. Krishna says, etad yonini bhutani sarvaniyati upadharaya aham krishnasya jagataha prabhavam pralayastatha. He says, of all that is material and all that is spiritual in this world, understand, O Arjuna, that I am both the origin and I am the dissolution, the destruction also. I am the beginning and the middle and the end of everything. All these energies are coming from me. So all the energies are resting upon Krishna, and everything is resting upon Krishna's energies. So in that sense, Lord Krishna is everywhere. In the 9th chapter, this is a very important point to understand. In the 9th chapter, Lord Krishna declares, He says, Maya tatam idam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina matsthani sarva bhutani na chaham teshva avasthitaha. He says that I am everywhere in this entire creation. Mayi sarvam, mayi tatam idam sarvam. Tatam, the word tatam in Sanskrit means expanded, spread out. So he says, I am spread out everywhere. Mayi tatam idam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina. Now the word avyakta means unmanifest. Unmanifest means impersonal. So immediately somebody may think that Lord Krishna is impersonal, the Supreme Absolute Truth is impersonal. This is a great debate that has gone on from time immemorial. That actually God is not a person, He is just some impersonal force, just a Shakti. God cannot be a person, such people argue. But God is not an ordinary person, as we saw last time. Or what is avyakta in this verse? The word avyakta refers to the energy, not to Krishna. The energies are impersonal. But who is behind the energies? The energetic. The energetic, like for example, this light. This light is impersonal. This light is spread out everywhere, it doesn't have anything. But the bulb, that is localized. It is at one point. You can understand there, yes. The light is coming from the lamp. So behind the energy, there is an energetic. So what is avyakta? The avyakta is the reference to the energies of Krishna. And just like the lamp is spread all over through the medium of its energy, the light, similarly Krishna is spread over everywhere through the medium of His energies. The example of the bulb is very easy and interesting. So every time there are so many analogies, wonderful analogies are given to make our understanding of the Absolute Truth very easy. Just look at this bulb. The bulb is situated in one place, but yet it is expanded everywhere. It is everywhere in this room. How is that? Through the medium of the light. Because the light is everywhere. Without the lamp, there will be no light. The light is resting upon the bulb. Similarly, Lord Krishna says that my energies are spread everywhere and everything is resting in my energies. But just in case, if someone says that actually because Lord Krishna is spread everywhere, he has no personality, just to avoid this, to defeat this argument, Lord Krishna says the next two lines of that shloka, Matsthani sarva bhutani na chaham teshva avasthitaha. He says, all living beings are in me, yes, no doubt. But I am not in them, he says. Everything is in me, but I am not in them. What is the meaning of saying, I am not in them? At one place he says, I am in your heart as the Paramatma. I am seated in every atom. And then now he is saying that I am not in this energy, I am not in this creation. He says this because he wants to say that I am aloof from my creation. I am not dependent upon my creation. I am always transcendental to my creation. The creation, the energy is always under my control. Everything is within me. It is dependent on me and not the other way around. I am not dependent on my creation. The creation is dependent upon me. Therefore, I am the Supreme Absolute Truth. This is the way we understand. So when Krishna is spread out all over, Mai Tatam Idam Sarvam, or expanded everywhere, we should not take it to mean that Krishna has lost his personality. Just like because the light is everywhere, we should not think that there is no one source from which it is coming. There is a source that is localized. Similarly, Lord Krishna's energies are everywhere, but the source of that energy is situated at one place. That is Lord Krishna. He is the origin. And because Lord Krishna is the support of all creation, no scientist, no materialist can ever discover any law. No one can discover any principle that will be able to negate or deny the existence of God. We have so many laws. Those of you who are students of science, in your school days you have studied. So many laws are there in physics and chemistry and so on. And all these scientific laws, they don't incorporate God in the picture. But yet, although the scientists may not be able to perceive God with their senses, they may not be able to understand who is God, they may not believe there is God, but yet, they can never manufacture any law or any principle that can deny that God exists. They can never prove by means of their laws that God does not exist. It is not possible. Because Krishna says that everything is resting upon me. I am the Supreme Absolute Truth, the support of everything. So even the laws are based upon this support. All these laws, who is making them? Usually Nobel Prize is given if somebody has discovered a new law. Has he discovered? The law was already there. So who is making the laws? The person who is making the laws is that supreme support of everything, Krishna. This is the way we can understand very, very easily. So the example further is given by Srila Prabhupada, a very nice example to understand this. He says there is a sun. From the sun, the energy is coming, the sunshine. The sunshine is impersonal everywhere. But when you go, you find closer, there is a sun globe from which the energy is coming. And inside the sun globe, there is a sun devata, Vivashvan. The sun also is being run by a devata. Somebody is there. The sun simply cannot just shine by itself. If you remember in the fourth chapter, Lord Krishna says, Imam Vivashvate Yogam Proktavan Aham Avyayam. He says, I first instructed this science of Bhagavad Gita to the sun god Vivashvan. So this Vivashvan, the sun god, is the one who is controlling the sun planet. And he is controlling the heat and light. The heat and light of the sun is everywhere because of which life in this universe is being sustained. So the sunlight is impersonal. But you investigate, you find there is a sun globe. You investigate further, you find there is a person. Similarly, Yasya prabha prabhavato jagadanda koti kotishvashesha vasudhade vibhuti bhinnam tad brahma nishkalam anantam ashesha bhutam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. The same Lord Brahma who was bewildered earlier, he praises Lord Krishna and he says that from your bodily effulgence, the bodily effulgence is Brahman, the Brahma Jyoti that the jnanis are seeking. From that bodily effulgence, in that are floating innumerable planets, spiritual and material. Everything is resting in them. But that effulgence is resting in you. So just like the sunshine comes from the sun globe, the Brahma Jyoti, the impersonal aspect of Krishna, is resting, is coming from Golok Vrindavan, the supreme spiritual planet. Just like there is a sun planet in the material world, there is a spiritual planet in the spiritual world called Golok Vrindavan. And in this Golok Vrindavan is Krishna. Krishna, the supreme person, who is the source of all these different energies which are sustaining the creation. So in this way we can understand that there is a spiritual world, there is a material world. In the spiritual world also there are innumerable planets, but the chief planet among them is called Golok Vrindavan, which is the personal planet, the personal abode of Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna is personally present there, and from him all the energies are being expanded. This is the understanding. These points are a little sometimes difficult to understand. But any serious student of Bhagavad Gita must sooner or later come to terms with these philosophical ideas. That is why we also give so many stories and other things in between to make it a little light. Actually, it's very simple. If only we are very eager to hear, if we are very attentive and simple at heart, this philosophy is not very difficult to understand. It is very simple. So therefore, we can understand that the Supreme Absolute Truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the person, Krishna. And nobody is higher than him. So we will stop here. And for 5 or 10 minutes, if you have any questions, any comments, I will be happy to answer.
What should be our relationship with God? Should we love him, or should we respect him, or should we worship him? I mean,
it is stated in the scripture, Jivera Swarupa Hoy Krishner Nityadas. The constitutional position of the Jivatma is that he is eternally servant of the Lord. Servant means we have to serve. Serve how? Not like the domestic people, the domestic servants who come to your house serve. They come and they will fight, or they will create some problem, or they will demand an increase in salary. Why the domestic servant? Every person in this material world, would you be working for your business or your company if you did not get a salary? You are not working out of devotion or love. You are working because you need the money, because you want something in return. That is also service. But that is not the relationship of service between the Jivatma and Krishna. The service that the Jivatma has to render to Krishna is service that is pure, devotional and unmotivated. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated, Savai punsan parav dharmo yato bhaktir adhokshaje ahaituki apratahita yayatma suprasiddhati. The supreme dharma for humanity is that by which loving service by bhakti to the Supreme Lord can be awakened. And what is the nature of that service to the Lord, that bhakti? It should be ahaituki apratihita. Without any hetu, without any purpose, without any motivation, ulterior motive. And it should be apratihita, which means it should be without interruption. No question of Sundays and 20 holidays in the year, bank holidays, or 1 month vacation, casual leave, sick leave, privilege leave. No. Uninterrupted, unmotivated, unconditional service out of love, voluntarily rendered. That is the relationship of the soul to Krishna. Yeyatma suprasiddhati. Unless you do that, you will not be satisfied. And if you do that, you will be completely satisfied. The Atma can be satisfied only by devotional service. Yeyatma suprasiddhati. It is only by this process of bhakti that you can satisfy the soul. By material endeavors, by getting money and this and that in this world, you may temporarily be able to satisfy some of your bodily senses of this material body for some time only. Then again you will be deficient. You will be frustrated again. But if you satisfy the soul, then you will be completely happy. Spiritual life means to understand how to satisfy the soul. And by the process of bhakti, the soul is completely satisfied. Suprasiddhati, at peace, bliss. This is the peace and the bliss that is possible only by the process of rendering devotional service to the Lord. And what is the meaning of this devotional service? Different kinds of services are there, but in detail we will study in some other time. Various forms like hearing his name and glories, his messages, chanting, remembering, worshipping, talking about him. All these are different forms of service. Yes, please.
When you say that everything rests in me, that is what Krishna says. And he is the supreme in all respect. So here if we just, for the sake of argument, as we say, which existed first, whether hen or the egg, here the so-called God or the supreme energy, that also should have come from something, as we argue in that way. So then at that juncture we are again lost. Then how that so God or the Krishna or the supreme energy came from and existed? So like that hen and...
You see, as I was explaining earlier in one of the shlokas, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam Adi Devam Aja Vibhum. Aja means unborn. You see, and again Brahma says Ishvara Paramaha Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karnam. Anadi means he has no beginning. And Adi means he is the beginning of everyone else. So the definition of God, this point we covered last time. Exactly the same question that you are talking about. That he is the source of everything, but he doesn't have any source. Sarvakarana Karanam. As I was explaining in the last lecture, if you recall, I said all of us have an origin. All of us are coming from parents, they are coming from their parents. What to speak of living entities, even inanimate things like this microphone, it is also coming from somebody. Ultimately, they have a source. But if you trace it backwards and backwards and backwards, you will ultimately come to a full stop, where there is no further backward, no beyond. That full stop is Krishna. By definition, that is the meaning of God. God means he who has no beginning and he who has no end. There is no question of what happened before, because Krishna is the beginning of everything. That is what it means to be God. Otherwise, what is the meaning of God if he had some origin? If he had some origin, that means he would be dependent upon something else. And then he would not be the highest truth. Highest truth means he is independent, supremely independent. He is not dependent upon anybody else. I may say I am very great, but if I was not created, I would not be here to say I am great. So where, what is the value of my greatness? But when Lord Krishna, when we say Lord Krishna is great, it means he is truly great, because his greatness is not dependent upon somebody else. That is why he says there is no truth superior to me, there is no origin for me, but I am the origin for everyone and everything. Are there any other questions?
Did you refer the word avyakta to in relationship to this his potences?
Yes.
Avyakta means they can't be seen, isn't it?
Unmanifest in the sense that it can be used in various contexts. The word avyakta means unmanifest. Yes. Unmanifest in this world can mean it can be gross or it can be subtle. But the reference here from the word avyakta, people may sometimes imagine that God is impersonal. He is avyakta. He is nirakar. So just to dispel that notion, Lord Krishna further says that I am aloof from this. Don't think I have lost my personality because I have spread out everywhere through my energies. Just like Vivashvan is in the sun globe, although the sunlight is everywhere, but the person is still there. Similarly, Krishna says that everywhere my energies are spread, but because I am spread everywhere, it doesn't mean that I am not here present personally as I am.
Only the potencies are...
Yes, the potencies are impersonal, are sometimes unmanifest. They are manifest, unmanifest.
Avyakta,
yes. Just like this energy. The energy is an unmanifest state of existence, but the energetic, the source is there. It's very tangible.
But now can we say, the point comes, now all these eight energies, Bhumi, Rapu, Analo, Vayu, etc., all those, Manobuddhi, Raivacha, Ahankar, etc. They are the eight energies separated. They sort of manifest in the form of this body, human body, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes.
So there can we say they are manifest?
Yes.
These separated energies, they
yes.
are manifest, aren't
yes.
they?
Yes.
So
because everything in this material world, the material energies, they are manifest and unmanifest. Manifest, unmanifest. That is what is going on. But essentially, at the end, and everything becomes unmanifest. Lord Krishna says the cycle of manifesting, unmanifesting, is going on and on. Bhutva, bhutva, pralayate. This whole cycle is going on.
You mean they
this
get
is all a combination or a manifestation of the energies.
You mean they get folded back into Him? Is that what you are referring to?
Yes. Because all the energies come back to Him, they rest in Him.
Yes.
So they come back to Him. Then again there is some other manipulation, some other combination of the energies. And you get some other form. Then that form is destroyed. You get another form. Just like this body, it has a form. But after some time it will be destroyed. All the matter that is forming this body will mix with the earth.
Yeah.
It will be destroyed, eaten up by worms, by ants. It will become ash. So it will be manifested and transformed into different forms. In this way the energy will go on recycling. So the energy in that sense is referred to as being impersonal.
Can I ask you another question, please?
Yeah, it is now, I think, time for the darshan.
Just
so,
one minute.
Can we have the question after the darshan? One question, because they are waiting to open it. We will wait for a few minutes and we will have the question after that.
Sir, there are 11 elements, am I right?
24 elements.
24 elements. We know about the 8 elements as stated in the Bhumi, Rapu and Alu.
Yes. Further also there are in the chapter on material nature, Lord Krishna will describe 24 elements. But yes, principally 8, 5 gross and 3 subtle. Bhumi, Apa, Nala, Vayu, Kham, Mano, Buddhir, Evacha, Ahankar, Iti, Yamme, Bhinna, Prakritir, Ashtadha. Ashtadha means 8.
Eight.
These 8.
And have you got the names of other 16 elements somewhere else in the Bhagavad Gita?
Yes. These are 8. Then there are the 5 working organs of the body.
Jnanendriya you are talking about?
Yes. No, not the, we are talking Karmendriyas.
Karmendriyas.
Karmendriyas means the organs of work. The hands, the legs, the tongue, the anus and the genitals. These are 5. Then you have the Jnanendriyas, 5. The senses by which you acquire knowledge. Eyes, skin, ears, tongue, nose. That's another 10. That is 18. Then after that, you have the elements of Pradhana. Pradhana means the unmanifested modes of nature. So you have the 5 Karmendriyas, the 5 Jnanendriyas, then you have these 8, you have time, you have direction, and you have soul. So totally, that makes about 24.
Time.
So we will discuss appropriately, or we can read that particular shloka. In the meanwhile, if somebody can ask the next question while I find this shloka, if anybody has any questions. So I will read out that shloka. Yes?
You said that the eternal position of the soul is to be a servant of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Now you said that it is possible totally if you, it is not possible to do it in between. Like you'll enjoy and be happy only if you are totally servant. And you'll be completely unhappy if you are not servant. There is nothing in between. And to reach that level of stage, to be a totally common saint, to use all your senses and all your thinking and all your sort of services in that position, you have to be totally surrendered. But, and to totally surrendered by service means to talk about Krishna all the time, to hear about Krishna all the time, and to see Krishna. This means that most of the time we should be concentrated or trained ourselves to look to be at Krishna. Now, but for a common man, office going man or something like that sort. On what kind of criteria would he offer a service to him? Because he cannot afford to see all him all the time and use his hands and legs in service all the time and talk about Krishna consciousness to all the people all the time. So what kind of service can he offer to him? Can he give his service, feel that or believe that he, whatever his working, whatever his position is, or doing some work, or electrical work, or what kind of any other work, doctor work.
Yes.
That is service to Krishna by doing his work.
You see, the first thing is that we cannot immediately come to the stage of Ahetukiya Patihita devotion. It takes time. Time means many lives. Now, everyone in this room has spent many lives in the past. That is why we are all here together talking about Krishna. Otherwise, we would not be here. So, this is the life in which you have to become a pure devotee, which you must try to become a pure devotee and reach that very standard of devotion, the high standard, which is nothing new. It is the nature of the soul to be of that standard. But now we have forgotten the nature of the soul, so now it seems to us to be such a difficult thing to do. But actually, it is your real nature. It is your swabhava to be like that. So by the process of bhakti yoga, gradually, it is possible to invoke. As far as the second part of your question, can you also remember Krishna? Can you do this when you are working out? That is what exactly Lord Krishna asked Arjuna to do. He asked him, Yudhyasva mam anusmara. While you fight, you remember me. Fight, but remember me. While fighting, just like Srila Prabhupada gives the example of a factory. The factory is owned by somebody. And there are employees. When the factory employee, when the owner goes out, the worker, while he is working, is still aware of who owns the factory, of who is the proprietor. Isn't it? He remembers, he is aware. Similarly, the proprietor of this entire creation is Krishna. So while you are working in this big factory, remember, Krishna is the owner. He is the proprietor of everything. Isha vasyam idam sarvam yat kimcham jagatyam jagat. So always remember that he owns everything, and he says, therefore, Krishna tells Arjuna, yudhyasva mam anusmara. While you fight for me, remember me when you fight. So do your work as an offering to him. And above all, before we can learn to remember Krishna 24 hours a day and even in our work, we should learn to remember him at least for a certain amount of time every day by chanting his holy names. If you are regularly, sincerely chanting, taking aside some time of the day for chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, then gradually you will be able to remember Krishna more and more through the medium of his name. That is the preliminary requirement. And then you will be able to remember Krishna in all circumstances. So before that, just the verse that you were asking for, 24 elements. It is in chapter 13, verses 6 and 7. I will read the verse. The five great elements, that is, Bhumi, Apa, Nalo, Vayu, Kham. False ego, intelligence. The unmanifested, that is the Pradhan. The 10 senses. That means the five Jnanendriyas, five Karmendriyas. The mind. The five sense objects. Five sense objects means the sense of taste, the sense of smell, sense of sight, sense of hearing, all these things. So then, desire, hatred, happiness, distress, the aggregate, the life symptoms and conviction, all these three are considered in summary to be the field of activities and its interaction. So totally they become 24. So, if you take up chapter 13, where Lord Krishna discusses nature, the enjoyer and consciousness. In chapter 13, you will find this. And you can get more details when you read that chapter. Are there any other questions?
Lord Krishna is supreme.
Yes.
Then he is everywhere in this world. Everything is controlled by him.
Yes.
Then why in this material world there are all evils like war and crime? Can't he control all this?
Yes, he can control. He is controlling. But that is his way of controlling. Because through the medium of these wars, he is enabling two things to happen. Number one, he is enabling those rebellious sinful souls who want to engage in sinful activity. He is giving them permission to do that because that is their independence. And secondly, he is also enabling many others to receive the reactions of their sinful activities. What they have done, this is also a medium for them to receive their sinful reactions. So, Prabhupada used to say, for example, that these days we find so many people have been killed like cats and dogs all over the world, isn't it? In thousands and thousands of people are being slaughtered. Why? Because of two principal reasons. Can you name them? What are the two major sinful activities as a result of which we find so many large numbers of people being slaughtered all over the world? Yes? Meat eating is number one, yes. And second? Abortion. Killing of children in the womb. because we are slaughtering animals and also slaughtering our own children within the womb. So these are all karmic reactions coming. So Krishna is allowing the wars and the pestilences and the disease and epidemics and all these calamities to come and give the reactions of the karma, the bad karma, the sins to different people who may appear to be innocent. Innocent from the point of view of this life, but previous lives. And also, Krishna gives us independence by which to act sinfully or by which to act in His devotion. That choice is given to Him, given to all of us. Huh? So I think we will stop here. Any other questions I will answer at a personal level because it is getting a little late. So thank you very much for coming. We will have prasad now. But before that I would like to remind you that we have to learn these shlokas every week. Each shloka that is taught and discussed in that week, you please try to memorize. So in this way you will be able to memorize 52 shlokas at the end of the whole year. So already now we have discussed some shlokas. Can anyone just recite the shloka one time? Anyone can recite the first shloka we have done? Yes? On the mic.
Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam saranam vaja aham tam sarva papevya mokshayami masa.
Very good. Mokshayami masa. Excellent. The next shloka that we did, anyone would like to try? Yes? Can you pass the mic? Maybe?
Aham sarvasya prabhavo matya sarva
mataha
sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam
buddha
bhav savanvita.
Excellent, very nice. And what about today's shloka? It's all in front of you. So please try to remember this shloka. It is very good exercise. Soon I am trying to bring out a booklet of all the 108 important shlokas, what selected shlokas, and we'll try to publish it and print it so you can, when you're traveling, you can keep with you and try to memorize these shlokas. So when you try to memorize, please try to memorize the words, the meaning of the words also, and then read the purport. In this way, please try to meditate upon this. And next time also, those of you who wish voluntarily, we will have some time for you to recite those shlokas if you like, that we have done in the past. Only those who want to recite, can recite. We have just finished it. This is the shloka of the week. And we'll be starting with another shloka next time. We have just finished the shloka now. And as far as the way, when you come regularly to these classes, you will get into the habit of doing it. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.